Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Yes, indeed. We are joined on the line by Dolly Ngonji, who is going to be speaking to us right now. Dolly, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. And how are you?
Very well, thank you. And thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Lovely. We're excited to have you this afternoon. Now, we want to talk about women's rights in the workplace. I mean, devalued, invisible, exploited, and many times undermined. These are often the terms used to describe the situation of working women. And over the past few years, we've seen a number of interventions aimed at changing the situation of working women in South Africa, in the continent of Africa, and of course, the world over. And so in this conversation with Dolly Ngonji, distinguished HR executive with expertise across various industries, we delve into key aspects of women's rights in business under the South African law particularly. Now, Dolly, what are the major challenges that women face in workspaces today?
Yeah, thank you so much. Love the intro. Look, I want to start off by first appreciating workplaces that are doing their bit to advance, you know, gender equity where women representation and advancement is actually concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, having said that, I mean, we've seen slow progress. And look, I mean, good intentions, I suppose, are not enough, and representation is not enough if the lived experiences of women are still undermined, to your point earlier on, and if women are still facing some of these invisible barriers. And so if we look at, for instance, some of the challenges that women are actually facing at the moment is that, yes, you do have, and you see some advancement in terms of the progression of women in workplaces, but they're very individualistic, right? I mean, you still have lack of structural inclusion in terms of embedded practices and policies that are more sustainable to make sure that women, you know, flourish and advance for a long term. And so when I think about some of the challenges that are imminent and prevalent, the first one that comes to mind is safety and workplace safety in that, and specifically talking about the issue of sexual harassment, which is still very prevalent in South African workplaces, with about 30% of women across South Africa having reported sexual harassment cases. Just this is now across South Africa. And it's truly alarming because essentially what we're saying is that, you know, women encounter, you know, sexual harassment, whether it's physical, verbal, in workplaces. And not only that, I think the bigger issue here is the fact that there are some women who probably do face sexual harassment, but there's no psychological safety for them to be able to speak up in this work environment. So essentially, they face all of these atrocious discrimination, acts of discrimination and harassment, but because they fear retaliation and being punished, they end up being quiet because the culture and the environment itself is not safe for people to be able to speak up. And that's the one that I think about. But secondly, the lack of flexibility in some workplaces. Again, I'm really applauding some organizations that have created those structures, you know, for flexibility. But we have to be honest, right, and acknowledge the fact that women play multiple roles, whether that's being a mother, career woman, caregiver, or, you know, taking care of the household in its entirety. But what we're saying here is that workplaces are designed, you know, quite traditionally and, and in a manner that doesn't necessarily accommodate these multiple roles that have to be integrated in terms of the work that women actually do. And so I think your workplaces need to be, you know, very careful around the thinking in terms of how do they work, you know, do this work, life integration where women are able to manage these other roles and wear these multiple hats but still deliver effectively in the workplaces that they find themselves in. And then I think most importantly, and the third challenge that's quite prevalent is the one of financial well-being or the lack thereof. And this is attributed to the anomalies in terms of pay disparities in the workplace where women are feeling like, you know, they're under pressure financially because they've been paid less than what men are in these workplaces. And I suppose I'll stop there, but I think at a high level, these are the top three challenges I think that are quite prevalent and eminent in workplaces, workplace safety, lack of flexibility in terms of work practices that make sure the full inclusion of women in terms of integrating their multiple roles, as well as financial well-being or the gender disparities that are existing in the workplace currently.
Man, that's quite comprehensive, your response. But I must say, you know, as you are unpacking the problems that we still have today, my mind just raced to 1956, about 69 years ago exactly today. And you would think that about 31 years later, after democracy was, you know, achieved, at least some of these would have now been non-issues. And yet we are still talking about these today. But we'll come back to that, because in my mind I'm thinking, would it be a question of political will, etc.? But we'll get back to that. Now, how do societal norms and cultural practices impact on women's rights in the workplace?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. I mean, I think it feeds into just the statement that you just made, which I suppose we have to unpack briefly as we're leading on to that.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes we're under the illusion that just because we've got this intention, these grand intentions of changing workplaces, and these interventions that we normally deploy, we're thinking that things are going to change. But again, we need to acknowledge that where there remain systemic barriers and the structure itself is unchanged, nothing is going to change. These things are just going to be events, right? Mm-hmm. We need to deal with the root cause, I suppose, of the problem. And talking about the past, I mean, I can't help but think of patriarchy that existed, you know, centuries and still permeates in the workplace till today, where by definition, patriarchy is where you've got males being advanced and promoted and progressed in the organization due to power and privilege assumed, you know, decision makers. And so that's kind of infiltrated the workplace. And remember, this is it's an issue that's longstanding. When we talk about patriarchy, it's historical, to your point earlier on, but it continues to infiltrate the workplace, where men get advanced, they get promoted based on this assumption that they are better decision makers in the workplace, and that they have the primary power to dominate some of these leadership roles based on authority and the privilege that they've actually been given. And so how this then manifests itself in the workplace in terms of that societal norm is that men then are more likely to hold these top positions, or they're more likely to get paid more for the same value and amount of work that women can potentially do. And then the second thing is bias, you know. These biases are very prevalent, and how you also see this manifest in the workplace is where there's something that we call, for instance, motherhood penalty. So I then decide, you know, I'm going to be a mother, and in the natural order of things. And then there are these biases that impede on me assuming, you know, some of these positions, for instance, where, oh, okay, now she's going to be a mother. She's going to be less flexible. She's not going to be able to give us her absolute best. She's not going to always be available. And so it's these preconceived notions and judgments and automated judgments that are carried into the workplace that serve as limitations and barriers to the progression then of women, stemming from these social and cultural norms that you're actually alluding to.
You know, I'm actually listening to what you're saying, and I'm thinking there's a woman sitting as the head of state in Namibia, Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, who has taken up space. It may not have been easy, but she's gone in there, taken up space, and really, I think outperforming completely some of her counterparts on the continent. I mean, the way she's dealing with things, the transformation that she's bringing to the country and stuff like that, is because it sounds as though women are not in position, or they are impeded in participating in leadership roles. Wouldn't they just get in, grab the spaces, and run with them, instead of waiting for spaces to open?
Yeah, I like that question. Look, you're absolutely right. But at the same time, if the environment is not cultivated for women to be able to do so, that becomes an entirely different discussion altogether. So, you know, as a matter of fact, you can hire me, right? And I can assume the role. But if I can't express myself in that environment, if my ideas are not heard, if I'm not seen, I'm not visible in that kind of environment, it's all null and void, right? I'm just a number then. So if the spaces are not safe enough for women to be able to be able to execute and implement based on their craft. Again, I mean, I think it's a fruitless exercise. And I also want to say, you know, when we're talking about this conversation around the advancement of women, sometimes there's a perception that we are advancing for women's rights because they want to be mollycoddled. No, we're not saying that. Women are credible. Women are able to do their jobs. But what we're saying is that create the right environment and the space for them to be able to flourish. So if I'm in an environment where I can do all of these things that you've just listed, but I am met with a lot of unconscious biases, where I'm actually told that I'm too emotional to make decisions, and men are seen as natural leaders. I mean, those biases can actually be quite harmful. So I may have good intentions with my craft and have credibility as a female leader, but if I'm told that I lead with emotion, if I'm told that I'm too aggressive, it kind of dilutes, right, what I'm able to bring to the table. And so, and also, I mean, you can hire, you know, women into these leadership roles and positions, but if you don't empower them and give them, you know, the adequate sponsorships where people support them and in rooms where they're not even there and really just advocate for them, again, I think it becomes quite short-sighted. And so, again, women are credible, but if the space is not safe, if they are not supported and guided to be able to assume those leadership positions that have been created, they are they're designed to fail, essentially.
You mentioned that if women can be empowered, now how can they be empowered then to negotiate for better terms and conditions in workspaces?
It's another good question. So first of all, I don't think that women can negotiate for things that they are not aware of. So if we look at, for instance, when you talk about terms and conditions in general, yes, but if you look at, let's say, pay as an example, if there's no transparency in terms of the pay ranges for particular occupational roles, I cannot negotiate for what I don't know. So I'm going to settle for what I'm given because there's no transparency in the process. And so I think that's the first thing, that organizations need to be very progressive in making sure that they're very transparent in terms of some of these terms and conditions so that women are able to negotiate. So that's the first part. But the second part is that I tend to believe that men are better negotiators than women. I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, I suppose that's why they're probably getting paid more than what women are, which is a fact. So I do think that we need to be empowered and educated in terms of our negotiation skills in general. That's what we need. And so, again, I mean, we can't be in spaces where we hold people accountable and talk about the fact that there's pay inequity and all of these things, but we ourselves are not educated enough to be able to negotiate for these kind of terms and conditions and hold people accountable for not creating these kind of spaces. And so I think organizations also then need to step up and educate and empower women to be able to build that knowledge capital just around being able to sit on a table and to be able to negotiate and understand what their worth is in those different spaces and terms and conditions.
Here's what do I call it? Maybe a stereotype, if you want. That I want to connect this with what you've just said in terms of you know, negotiating and being taught to negotiate. If we go to shopping places, the marketplaces, for instance, the shops and malls, etc. You know, when women go into a place and they are given a price, more often than not, they would pay the price, and it's unlikely that they would say, "No, man, that can I pay a little bit?" It seems as though, and I've spoken to a number of women, it seems as though you want to be, inverted commas, a cheapskate, as it were, when you negotiate prices. But with a man, if I go into a shop, let's say it's a chain store, Edgar's or Markham's, and I see this price and I'm thinking, "No, man, I shouldn't be paying this much." I'm able to say, "Guys, no, please reduce this price." And this actually embarrasses women if you do it in front of them, because they say, "Oh my goodness, he's such a cheapskate. He must just pay the price." Now, you take that. Doesn't it then go to a workspace where in those private spaces, women just take the prices they are given and they pay? And now they get to a workplace, they are made an offer, they just accept it because naturally they are not people who negotiate these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think it boils down to a couple of things, but two come to mind. I think women need to build the confidence, number one, right, to be able to negotiate. Because I think that's the one other part that's actually lacking. And what confidence means to me is being able to self-advocate. Mm-hmm. So you see what you're talking about permeating even in roles where women have a number of skills to offer, but they cannot self-advocate and be able to say, these are the skills that I have. I believe that I'm capable. I believe that I can assume this position. I believe I can do this job. I can put my hand up and add value here. Because somehow we don't necessarily have the confidence for it, or the space is not allowing altogether. So I think it's the being empowered to be able to self-advocate around those terms and conditions and putting yourself out there, beyond everything else. And you're absolutely right. I think men are able to do that. I mean, again, in the workplace, they're able to negotiate, you know, their salaries, they're able to negotiate promotions and all of these things. And for us, we kind of have this lack of confidence and maybe not necessarily aware of our worth in that space. And we need to take up space and understand, because we're in the environment, it means we're trusted. I mean, we're there to be able to build credibility. And so let's take up space and let's be able to advocate for ourselves to be able to grow and flourish into those kind of environments.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go to, I think, a serious, much more serious one. The gender pay gap, is it still an issue? Is it still a real concern?
It's a huge thing. It's an absolute huge thing. It's still a real concern. Mm. And firstly, maybe just to, for those who are listening, just to, by definition, what the gender gap is. Gender gap is essentially, it's the measurable difference, right, between a man and a woman in terms of pay structures. And so how it manifests itself in the workplace is that where women on average are earning less than men for the same or similar work. And like I cited in terms of stats, currently in South Africa, for instance, women are earning between 25 to 35% less than men for the same roles. So, and the reason why it's a burning issue and it's important, it's because it perpetuates inequality. First of all, that's what it does. So you find organizations screaming the fact that they are for inclusion and equality, all right, which I suppose is also the backbone of our constitution in South Africa. But when it comes to designing practices that eradicate those inequalities, those things are they null and void. They're not there, right? Because you still see men earning more than what women are earning. And so it's still a big thing, and it's a conversation that we need to continue to have. And so I don't think that organizations need to continue doing lip service when it comes to this. When we talk about pay anomalies, it's a serious issue, because not only does it perpetuate inequality in the workplace, it feeds into our households, because it means if we've got less earning potential, we're taking home less, essentially, which obviously then affects the economy, you know, the spend and all of that stuff. So it's a bigger issue that we need to continue to unpack in terms of dialogue. Not only dialogue, by the way, we need to act. Organizations need to be intentional. They need to hold themselves accountable in terms of numbers to say, if this is where we were in 2025 in terms of our income differentials, this is what we have done to be able to bridge that gap, the following year. So they need to hold themselves accountable. So it's not only a workplace thing, it's a societal and a South African war, you know, African dilemma altogether, I suppose.
And quite unfortunate, because you see a number of households, in our communities, led by women, which means that a number of women are breadwinners out there. So you contrast that with the fact that women are then not adequately paid. It's actually, I think it's disastrous to put it politely. Now, you mentioned dialogue earlier, and I want to actually zoom into that as we conclude our conversation. What would you say is the role of education and community dialogue in advancing women's rights?
Yeah, I thanks for that question. And maybe just before I answer that question, I've got this in mind that I'd love to see an era and a world where women don't have to negotiate for terms and conditions, where women don't have to negotiate for the salaries. And organizations are so progressive, and they know that it's good business to be able to pay people fairly and equitably. I'd love to see that world, by the way, because it's just the right thing to do, right?
Exactly.
Organizations should have that, you know, in mind more than anything else. And so I think just in terms of, you know, dialogue, it's so critical to continue having conversations around this. I mean, the role of education, of course, people can't challenge what they don't know, right? And so if they don't know what women's rights are. And if women themselves don't know what their rights are, they can't challenge some of these stereotypes, they can't challenge some of these biases, they can't challenge some of these terms and conditions without the knowing. So I think first and foremost, it's really just creating a level of sensitization and awareness around what are these women's rights that we're actually talking about.
Yeah.
And really just being open, talking about these biases and cultural norms that are existing in workplaces. We have to be able to have those transparent conversations where, for instance, women's roles are not necessarily only seen as domestic, but secondary in workplaces. We have to be able to have those conversations to say, how do women, you know, not only seen, you know, as valuable, but I mean, adding value into those organizations that they're actually working in. So I think a dialogue is critical, not only for workplaces, but for communities. And what that does is that once we start doing some form of sensitization, people begin to challenge. And then most importantly, people are held accountable, right? Because I think accountability is a very big thing, that this doesn't become a woman-only mandate. It's not just a woman-only mandate, but it becomes everybody holistically supporting equality of women for the greater good of workplaces, greater good of societies, and greater good of the country in general, I suppose. And when we start having dialogue, what I love about dialogue is that you're creating a safe space for people to be able to speak up, right? About some of these challenges that they're actually facing, hopefully then getting into solution mode and really just co-creating, right, some of these solutions. Because sometimes workplaces think they know what's best for women, but how about getting women in the room and co-create with them and solution with them to better understand what their challenges are so that they can have meaningful impact through these conversations and action and taking then accountability.
Beautiful. In fact, I think we could talk about this subject until cows come home, but we got to leave it here for now. And I'm hoping that with the producer sometime in the future, we can actually catch up on these issues, because the more we talk about these, the more we are able to empower even those who are listening. I'm sure we do have managers and those who are in positions of responsibility listening to make sure that we create, you know, environments that are conducive for everybody, including women, to be able to work at. Dolly Ngonji, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Absolutely love this. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Lovely. Ngosi says.
Ngosi, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.